The New King, Chapter 62. Behold, two men are walking in the fields. They look searchingly to the right and then to the left. It seems as if they are hunting, as if they have lost something which they have. One man is Saul, of the tribe of Benjamin. His father's name is Kish, and he lives in Gibeah, a village in the neighborhood of Ramah, where Samuel's home is. The other man is Saul's servant. They are diligently looking for a few asses which have run away. Kish sent his son Saul to look for the lost asses, and Saul did so as an obedient son. They searched the entire district. They go through the land which belongs to Benjamin, and also through the land of the tribe of Ephraim, but in vain. The asses are gone and cannot be found. Saul says to his servant in the evening of the third day, "Come, let us return to our home. We cannot find the asses anyway. If we continue to seek longer, I am afraid my father will be worried about us. He may think that we have met with an accident, and I do not want him to think that." This concern was proof that Saul loved his parents. He did not want his father to be uneasy about him. Do you also think the same way sometimes? Or do you first play for a few hours after school is dismissed, so that your loving, tender mother doesn't know where you are staying, and she becomes exceedingly worried? That is done so often. You begin to play with your friends and forget all about the time, and your mother at home will look out the window maybe 100 times, or she may walk up the road to see if you are coming. Is that so terrible? Yes, boys and girls, that is terrible. You should go home first and tell your parents that you are going to play so that they will know where you are. By doing that, you can spare your father and mother a lot of sorrow. And will you think about that more often? You are duty-bound to do that to your parents. Saul thinks about it, and he is no little boy. However, his servant thinks it a pity that the asses are gone for good, so he suggests another idea. Listen to what it is. "We are near Ramah," he says. "A seer, a prophet, lives in that village. Let us go and ask him to help us." Saul agrees by saying, "That is not such a bad idea. But what must we give that man? Don't we have to present him with a gift? We don't have anything. Our bread is gone because of our long journey, and I have no money." "That isn't so bad," answers the servant. "I still have something. It isn't much, but that doesn't matter. The prophet will be satisfied with it." "Come then, let us go," decides Saul. They go on the road toward the village of Ramah. This place lay upon the mountains of Ephraim, for we read that they went up the hill. Soon they approach the outskirts of the village. However, they do not know where the prophet lives. Just then a few young girls meet them. They are going to fetch some water. Politely, Saul asks them, "Is it possible for you to tell me where Samuel lives?" "Yes, we can," their answer rings out. "Just walk on and you will find him, for there is a sacrifice in the city today." After they have gone a little further, Saul sees an old man approaching. He doesn't know this man, but he thinks, "I will ask him." He goes to this old man and asks courteously, "Can you tell me where the seer lives?" "I am the seer, my young friend," resounds the friendly voice of the aged Samuel. Come along with me. Tomorrow you can return to your own home, but tonight you must sleep here. You need not be concerned about the asses any more, for they are found. But I have something else to tell you. All Israel looks upon you. The desire of all Israel is toward you, and the best of everything that is in Israel is for you. Children, Samuel knew that Saul would come, because on the previous day the Lord had said to Samuel, "Tomorrow I will send someone to you. You must anoint that young man to be king over Israel." Saul looks bewildered when he hears the words of Samuel. Perhaps he did not immediately understand all that Samuel meant, because he answered, "I am not worthy of that great honor, for my tribe, the tribe of Benjamin, is the smallest, and my father's house is the smallest family. Why do you speak to me with such words?" Samuel takes him along to his home and gives him a place of honor at his table. Saul also receives a good piece of meat, which is deliciously roasted. Really, it is a kingly meal. That night, Saul slept on the roof of Samuel's house. Probably you will ask in astonishment, "On the roof? How is that possible?" Yes, that can be, because the Israelites had houses with flat roofs. It was so warm there in the summertime that it was hardly possible to remain in the house, and therefore they slept upon the roof. There it would be somewhat cooler because of the fresh breeze. So Saul slept in the best place of the entire house. They arise early the next morning, and Samuel accompanies Saul a short distance on the road. Upon the advice of Samuel, Saul commands his servant to walk ahead. However, Samuel and Saul remain behind. Samuel empties a vial, a bottle of oil, by pouring it on the head of Saul. That means that Samuel anointed Saul to be king. For the present, you should remember that Samuel anointed Saul from a vial, and a vial is breakable. We will refer to this in a later chapter. Then Samuel says, "Perhaps you still cannot believe that you will become king. Therefore, the Lord will give you three signs, so that you need not doubt. When you return homeward, two men will meet you. They will tell you that the asses are found, and that your father has become uneasy because of you. A little later, you will meet three men who will offer you a small present. And near your home, you will meet a few prophets. The Spirit of the Lord shall come upon you, and you too will prophesy." Samuel bids him farewell, and Saul hastens to his home. The very moment that Saul turns to go, the Lord changed his heart into a kingly heart. He received another heart, but he did not receive a new heart. He received wisdom to govern the people, but he didn't receive desire and love to serve and fear the Lord. The signs which Samuel foretold come to pass. Two men bring him the message that the asses are found. A little further, three men meet him, and they give him two loaves of bread, and a company of prophets come to him as he approaches his birthplace. He joins them and prophesies also. These are the three evidences that the Lord had called and anointed him to be king over Israel. Who shall be king? What will he look like? These are some of the questions which are in the minds of thousands upon thousands of Israelites. Daily they talk to each other about it. Therefore, when Samuel sends messengers throughout all Israel, bidding the people to assemble at Mizpah, they go. Everyone who is not hindered by sickness gets ready for the journey. When a new teacher or principal comes to your school, you too are curious to know who he or she is, isn't that right? What will he or she look like? Will he or she be strict? Your heart is aflutter with impatience, for you are so inquisitive. Now this is so in Israel too. No new teacher or principal is coming, but a king, the first king, their king. Is it any wonder that nearly everyone goes to Mizpah? There is so much excitement, so much commotion, and such a hum of voices in this otherwise quiet village. Maybe they looked around to see someone who possibly could be the king. No, they cannot guess who it may be, so they must wait. Their hearts pound with expectation. Suddenly it becomes quiet, breathlessly quiet. They all look in one direction. Samuel, their old judge, stands there, and many attempt to see him. Samuel begins to speak, but he is not joyful. His voice rings out seriously and somewhat sadly. The Lord your God, your King, has delivered you out of Egypt. He not only delivered you from the Egyptians, but also out of the hand of all the nations who wanted to harm you. But you have rejected the Lord your heavenly King, and you want another king, an earthly king. The Lord has heard this, and you will receive a king. It has become even more quiet, for in the words of Samuel lies a reproof because of their unthankfulness, because of their wickedness. Now the moment has come that the king will be chosen publicly. Samuel requests the ruler of each tribe to come forward. He casts the lot, and the tribe of Benjamin is designated. Perhaps the other tribes are disappointed that the sovereign would not come from their midst. All the families of the tribe of Benjamin come forward. From them, the family of Kish is taken. Finally, the lot falls upon Saul, the son of Kish. So, he will be the new king. They did the same here as formerly, when Achan, the thief of Jericho, was chosen. You still remember that, don't you? Now it is known who will reign over them. But the people also want to see him. Where is he? Where is he? They ask. They look all around, but they cannot find him. Isn't that something? Didn't he come with the others? They ask the Lord if he still would come to Mizpah. The Lord answers, he is there, but he has hidden himself. Look among the stuff, for he has crept away there. It is quite natural that the Israelites had taken on their journey trunks or bags in which things were packed which they needed on the way. All those trunks and traveling bags were put together in one place, and Saul had hidden himself behind them. Ah, he is bashful. He doesn't dare come and make his appearance. At this time, Saul is very humble. Had he only remained so. A few Israelites walk immediately to the baggage, and, sure enough, they find him. Saul must go with them, and they present him to the people. Everyone can see him. What a man! Nearly a giant. He is taller than everyone else. He is your king, Samuel cries. It's quiet for a while. People stare at him with respect and wonderment. Then the jubilating cry breaks forth, God save the king! God save the king! Yes, they are willing to have him as their king. Saul will be able to fight courageously. All their enemies will be afraid of him. However, there are a few who draw up their noses contemptuously. Bah, they say. What kind of a king is that, who crawls away like a little boy? We will have nothing on him. He cannot deliver us from our enemies. They despise him and do not give him a present. Probably they are jealous because they were not chosen. Saul hears it, but doesn't take notice. He acts as though he is deaf and hears nothing. That is wise of you, Saul. It is a sign that you have not yet become proud. As they all return to their homes, they are busily engaged in conversation together. Now they have a king, just as all other nations. Fine. But they do not give a thought to the fact that they have forsaken the Lord, their heavenly King, that they have offended God. One evening, an Israelitish farmer returns homeward. The entire day he had worked hard. Probably he was plowing or threshing his grain. In Israel, they didn't use horses for that work as we do, but they used oxen. Calmly, he walks to his home. But when he passes by the first houses of his village, he sees people standing together in groups. They are in deep conversation, and their faces are serious. Their voices ring out heatedly, and they are filled with anger and indignation. When they see this farmer coming, they all look at him. This common farmer notices it, so he walks to these people and asks what has happened and why they are so alarmed. Who is this farmer? Why, he is the king. What? Is he the king? Yes, children. After the gathering at Mizpah, where Saul was chosen by the Lord to be king before the eyes of all the people, he returned to Gibeah. He didn't immediately have a beautiful palace built for himself. No, he remained a farmer, an ordinary, common farmer. But now, when he realizes that something unusual has happened, the Spirit of God comes upon him. His anger is kindled greatly when he hears why the people are weeping. It is very dreadful. The Ammonites have invaded their country. Jephthah defeated them at one time, but now the enemy again will attempt to conquer the land on the other side Jordan. Nahash, their king, has assembled all his soldiers and has marched over the border with his large army. He lays siege around the city of Jabesh-Gilead. When the inhabitants of Jabesh are aware of this, they frighten exceedingly. It is impossible to fight against them. What must they do? It is best to surrender, and the only thing they can do is to open the gates of their city. They will become the slaves of Nahash and will have to serve the Ammonites. Few men from among them go to the hostile king and inform him of their decision. Nahash grins. Good, says he, I will not kill you, but You may rise up against me later as Jephthah did. That must not happen the second time. Therefore I will thrust out everyone's right eye, so that you never will be able to fight again. Isn't he a cruel man? What benefit would he obtain from that? That is fiendish. He wanted to make all those people maimed for the rest of their lives. The inhabitants of Jabesh are stricken with terror when they hear this. They don't feel much like doing that. Do you know what? They will ask for an extension of time, a delay of 7 days to try to get help. Nahash agrees. Well, yes, he thinks. You can try, but you will not succeed. He knew that the Philistines were masters over the Israelites on the other side Jordan, and they couldn't help their brethren. Behold, a few men steal out of the city. They are going for help. These messengers are now in Gibeah, the abode of Saul, and are telling what the purpose of their coming is. That is why the people are weeping. Saul hears the entire story. He gets red from anger. That is such a mean, low trick, he cries out. He takes a yoke of oxen, kills and cuts them into pieces, and quickly sends messengers throughout all Israel. Each messenger has a piece of this flesh with him. Their message is as follows: Come, come to the battle. We must help Jabesh. Everyone who remains home unnecessarily will be punished. All his cows and sheep will be cut to pieces as these oxen. The Israelites hear this, and they come together. Soon an enormous army is gathered, more than 300,000 soldiers. The men of Jabesh-Gilead steal safely back to their city. They tell what Saul intends to do. Saul, the king, will help us tomorrow, they say. The people of Jabesh-Gilead are very glad. But Nahash, the king of the Ammonites, must not know of anything. Therefore they send him this message: Tomorrow we will surrender and come out of the city. Nahash laughs. Do you see? No one will help. At least he thinks so. During that same night, Saul and his army go over Jordan. He divides his men into three groups, and when the Ammonites least expect it, they suddenly are fallen upon by the Israelites. They are taken by surprise. Soon they flee in wild disorder. However, the Israelites go after them, and the entire army is so completely defeated and scattered that not two Ammonitish soldiers remain together. Jabesh-Gilead is free. They have never forgotten that. They have been grateful to Saul for that, even after Saul's death. The people also rejoice. This has been such a splendid victory. Do you see? Do you see? It is much better this way. Our king has performed this deed. He was ready immediately. If we had to wait for a judge, it would have been too late. They assemble together at Gilgal and celebrate a feast there, a victory feast. Samuel also is present. The people wanted to kill the men who spoke so disdainfully about Saul when he was chosen. But Saul forbade it. No, no, he says, I do not want that to happen. The Lord helped us. Do not let us quarrel. We may not do so. Thus, Saul forgives them. He will not avenge himself. Samuel again addresses the people. He shows them their ingratitude in that they have rejected God. The people already have forgotten that, but the Lord does not forget. He will let the Israelites feel it. He will let them see it. This is the time of harvest, and it never rains in the land of Canaan during harvest. But look, the sky becomes overcast. It begins to shower and rain violently. It is the sign of God's displeasure. The people frighten, for they didn't expect that. We have sinned, they acknowledge. But Samuel speaks encouragingly to them. Fear not, rings from his lips. It is true you have sinned, sinned grievously. But from now on, serve the Lord, and he will bless you. However, if you forsake him, the outcome will be bad for you. For you and your king, you shall perish and be consumed. With these words, he left the Israelites, return each to his own home.